Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Our top story, Purdue University reportedly rejecting Chinese applicants for its graduate programs this year. The move comes after a congressional investigation into the visiting Chinese scholars at the university. China fired water cannons at roughly 20 Filipino fishing boats, injuring three fishermen. The incident comes just days after the U.S. and the Philippines conducted joint military drills angering Beijing.
And I think what's that doing is it's making the Chinese wary that the Philippine military, although small, is getting very, very well experienced.
And a pro-democracy activist is on trial for his legal status to stay in the U.S. His work has contributed to Western coverage of China's Xinjiang region, where Uyghurs face severe repression by the Chinese Communist Party. We spoke with his lawyer and a witness for more.
For freedom-loving Chinese, United States has always been a beacon of freedom and hope. And that's why so many people risk so much to come here.
And a former Chinese official, a whistleblower, says he's still being watched right here on U.S. soil. Just how far does China's long arm reach in tracking defectors and their families abroad? Purdue University has reportedly rejected Chinese applicants to its graduate programs for this academic year. The university also said it is highly unlikely to admit students from adversarial nations next year. That includes China, North Korea, Russia, Iran, Cuba, and Venezuela. A doctoral student said the university communicated the ban verbally. Another student said the chief academic officer warned that graduate program heads could not admit students from these countries. If they tried, their admission letters would not be signed, preventing the students from attending. In a statement to NTD, Purdue said it doesn't discriminate in admissions on the basis of race, color, or national origin. The move comes after the House Select Committee on China launched an investigation into six American universities, including Purdue. The committee says Purdue employs 16 visiting Chinese scholars connected to Chinese government agencies that develop military technology. The report also says American universities admit thousands of Chinese nationals connected to China's military and defense industry each year. A recent Purdue graduate told NTD that many Chinese students return home to pursue careers in national defense after finishing their studies. Notably, one Purdue alumni helped develop China's first atomic bomb in the 1960s.
Purdue might have realized that it has become a way for authoritarian countries to siphon knowledge to develop scientific innovations useful for the battlefield. So its move to reject Chinese students is understandable at a time when the world has become polarized.
Back in May, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said the U.S. will begin revoking visas for Chinese students. This includes those with ties to the Chinese Communist Party or studying in critical fields. Over the weekend, the Philippines said China fired water cannons at about 20 Filipino fishing boats in disputed waters. Three fishermen were injured, and two fishing vessels suffered significant damage. The incident comes just a few days after the U.S. and the Philippines conducted joint drills aimed at countering Beijing's threats in the region. It's a frequent move that angers China every time. The Philippine Coast Guard released footage showing Chinese vessels spraying water and surrounding a Filipino fishing boat. One smaller Chinese vessel was also seen cutting anchor lines, putting crews at risk. The footage was filmed Friday near Sabina Shoal. The Sabina Shoal lies within the Philippines' exclusive economic zone. China claims nearly the entire South China Sea, overlapping the economic zones of several countries, including the Philippines, Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Brunei. A 2016 international court ruling found China's claims illegal, a decision Beijing rejects. Paul Johnstone, a former Australian federal agent, says the Philippines may be small compared to China, but it punches above its weight. The country has signed military treaties and conducted joint drills with Western nations to counter threats from the Chinese Communist Party.
It's pleasing to see countries like, you know, Japan, Australia, America making, signing these treaties, and you've got countries, even European countries, coming out and, and doing joint patrols, Canadians. There's more and more of these countries coming to do these joint training exercises. And I think what's that doing is it's making the Chinese wary that the Philippine military, although it's small, is getting very, very well experienced. It's getting a lot of high-tech equipment. It's getting current training. It's getting the skills and knowledge that they require for any conflict with China.
John Stone adds that China is extremely wary of like-minded countries such as the U.S., Australia, South Korea, Japan, and many European nations that could potentially step in to support Taiwan or the Philippines in the event of a conflict. Next, a Chinese pro-democracy activist living in New York now faces the risk of deportation to Africa. He fled China 4 years ago and crossed into the U.S., carrying video he recorded in one of China's most sensitive regions, Xinjiang, showing what he says are concentration camps. A New York immigration court held a trial for his case on Monday. What's at stake if he's forced to leave the country? NTD's Flora Hua spoke with his lawyer and a trial witness for the latest update.
This story is about Guan Heng. He risked his life to film concentration camps in western China's Xinjiang region. Most of China's Uyghur ethnic minority lives in that area. The U.S. government estimates about 1 to 3 million Uyghurs are detained in these camps. Uyghur survivors have accused Beijing of committing genocide against the group. Guan escaped communist China and entered the U.S. through the southern border in 2021. As soon as he was safe, he uploaded footage that the CCP never wanted the world to see to YouTube. Media and human rights groups say the significant findings provide long-sought underground evidence supporting claims of the regime's abuses. Guan was arrested by ICE agents in this August. His lawyer said prosecutors filed a motion on Monday proposing a deportation plan to send him to Uganda. The next trial date is scheduled on January 12th. His lawyer, Chen Chuan-Chuan, says it's critical to convince the court that deporting his client to Uganda is very concerning, given China's extensive influence in Africa.
The Ugandan government has a troubling record of cooperating with the Chinese Communist Party in making arrests in Uganda. In fact, Chinese state media boasted about this as far back as 10 years ago, claiming that they directly dispatched police officers to Uganda to carry out arrests on the ground. Sending a well-known dissident like Mr. Guan to Uganda would be unsafe.
Guan Heng is among the younger Chinese generation who used VPNs to bypass Beijing's censorship and learned about the regime's brutal killings and human rights abuses since it came to power. In 2020, Guan read an article by the U.S. news site BuzzFeed News. The article cited multiple satellite images showing western China's Xinjiang region. There were maps marking locations the article identified as suspected Beijing-run concentration camps targeting Uyghurs. Guan decided to drive to Xinjiang to see it for himself. That's when he recorded the videos. Zhou Fengsuo, a Tiananmen massacre survivor and veteran pro-democracy activist, will testify for Guan's trial. He says Guan's actions align with American values and serve U.S. interests. He's optimistic for a positive outcome.
We have seen overwhelming support, so I think he is definitely someone that this country should. And can provide asylum to his courage and his sense of righteousness, what he has done, suits everything this country stands for.
If the United States decided eventually to, to deport Mr. Guan, what kind of signals would this send to Beijing, and also, how is this going to influence Washington's China policy going forward? What's the significance here?
Yeah, that would be catastrophic for United States. It would be a very bad signal for the people who care about human rights and care about the value and the interest of United States. And of course, it would embolden CCP to commit more heinous crimes like this, to the Uyghur people and to the Han Chinese as well.
Mr. Guan chose to come to the United States, and I believe there is something about the United States that Mr. Guan trusts and wanted to come here and then gave his very, very important priceless, you know, evidence about China's concentration camps to U.S. media institutes, right, like to U.S. media companies. So what does this say about, you know, the United States in Chinese people's mind? What kind of role do they think the United States has been playing on the world stage?
Yeah, I mean, for freedom-loving Chinese, United States has always been a beacon of freedom and hope. Yeah, that's why so many people risk so much to come here. I was a refugee myself. I'm a naturalized citizen now, and I'm very grateful for, you know, this freedom and the safety here. And I believe confronting CCP is the best to the interest of this country.
In places like Xinjiang, where foreign media cannot even gain access, the Chinese government's persecution of Uyghurs is even more unimaginable. Those who refuse to be enslaved cannot bear to see others enslaved. May the Chinese Communist Party and the Chinese government collapse and step down as soon as possible, bringing an end to these crimes against humanity.
We will keep a close eye on Guan's situation. Flora Hua, NTD News.
A Chinese whistleblower being tracked on American soil by the communist regime years after he fled China. The former Chinese regime official says some of the tools that the CCP is using are developed right here in the U.S. Here's more.
Former Chinese regime official Li Chunliang fled China for the U.S. in 2018 and publicly cut ties with the Communist Party 2 years later. Since then, he says the surveillance hasn't stopped.
They used their power overseas and got Interpol to issue a red notice, making it impossible for me to move around.
Li said a man he believes to be a CCP agent has followed him across state lines in recent months. He says the Chinese regime can trace people through phones, payments, travel records, as well as personal contacts. And all of this was happening on U.S. soil. Regarding why he left China, Li and the Chinese regime had different narratives on the situation. Li says he left China because he could no longer tolerate the corruption of other officials. He once reported his city's party secretary to higher authorities for corrupt practices, but Chinese state-backed courts accused him of corruption, costing hundreds of millions of dollars. There are charges that Li and his lawyers say are politically motivated. Unlike many other former senior CCP officials who came to the U.S. after retiring and lived quiet lives, Li spoke publicly, criticized corruption, and focused on exposing abusive Chinese regime officials. Beijing officials also went after Li's family and friends to apply pressure on him overseas.
A lot of my partners were arrested one by one.
More than 40 of Li's relatives and friends in China, including his pregnant daughter, have been detained. Li says he has lost contact with them and still doesn't know the full details of the accusations. Beijing's overseas surveillance campaigns, known as Operation Foxhunt and Skynet, rely on technology developed by U.S. firms. It includes software that taps into and records messages, finances, flights, and phone calls.
The development of China's technology to this point, especially surveillance, is definitely closely linked to Western countries, especially American high-tech companies. Simply put, they couldn't have done it without their technological support.
Chinese state media says more than 14,000 nationals have been forced back to China worldwide through pressure and intimidation. The FBI calls China's retaliation against people in the U.S. unacceptable, and the White House says it will pursue any violations of U.S. law.
A quiet operation with major geopolitical stakes. Last month, a U.S. Special Operations team intercepted a ship in the Indian Ocean seizing military-related materials. The vessel was bound for Iran from China. The Wall Street Journal first reported the operation Friday, citing U.S. officials. One official said the cargo included components that could be used in Iran's conventional weapons programs. The shipment was later destroyed. U.S. forces boarded the vessel several hundred miles off Sri Lanka's coast. After the materials were removed, the ship was allowed to continue its journey. Coming up, satellite images revealed China is rebuilding a World War II era runway not far from Guam. What does this mean for U.S. security in the region, and what is China projecting? Cleo Pascal joins us to share her on-the-ground experience. Welcome back to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. As tensions simmer in the Indo-Pacific, we take a closer look at what's happening closer to home. Satellite images reveal China rebuilding a World War II era runway on an atoll called Woliai in the Pacific, not far from Guam. What alarm bells does this raise for national security, and what is Communist China trying to do here? Joining us to discuss is Cleo Pascal, senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, for her on-the-ground experience. Cleo Pascal, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you back on the show.
Always a pleasure.
Now, diving right on in, satellite images plus your own on-the-ground reporting are showing that China, or a Chinese company, is trying to rebuild a World War II era airfield. This is on a little place called Woliai in the Pacific. First, talk to us about where exactly this is. How close is this to, say, Guam or the U.S.?
Sure. So Woliai is an atoll in the state of Yap, which is part of the Federated States of Micronesia. It's about 600 kilometers, more or less, south of Guam. So it might seem like it's fairly remote, but as the missile flies, or as if you could fly a direct plane, it's maybe a little bit over an hour flight. It's a short runway, but the fact is that the Chinese could use it if they wanted, and if the local political environment was satisfactory, to launch drones or to base missiles. It is very, very close to Guam and in a direction that the Guam defenses aren't necessarily designed to look at.
Now, digging in here, this runway used to, I guess, belong to Imperial Japan and then, you know, kind of went under U.S. control, and then apparently it was underwater all the time, so kind of disappeared and went into, you know, misuse. Looking at China's side, though, pouring money in here, you know, China often says this when it does the Belt and Road initiatives or a lot in the Pacific Islands, it's helping the local economy, right, boosting the economy, jobs, all that. What is the concern here, though, about China, quote unquote, helping here?
Yeah, so first of all, this runway is essential. It's literally a lifeline for the people of Woliai, but also for people from other parts of the island chain that aren't serviceable by plane. This was when the runway was operational. Pacific Mission Aviation, which is a missionary airline based out of Yap itself, could come in and do medevacs. Now, if you need to get off the island, first you have to wait for a boat, which comes maybe once a month, usually once a quarter often, and it's a four-day or five-day boat trip to the main island where the hospital is. So if you have a critical medical condition, you need a runway so that the plane can come in, pick you up, and take you to the hospital in a timely manner. So there's no question about that. But the Chinese ensured that the bidding was such that for this contract that they underbid by such a substantial degree that they were the only ones really that could get the footprint and build out the runway, develop the local relationships, and be the saviors of Woliai, even though this was, again, funded by the national government. And of course, the national government itself is heavily funded by the U.S. So you can understand how grateful the locals are when the Chinese arrive and inaccurately say, we're building you a runway. They're just grateful not to have to take that darn boat for another week in order to get home to see their parents or go to high school or go to a medical appointment or anything like that.
Really quickly on that, should the U.S. be doing something similar, if you will, to China by pouring funds into infrastructure like this?
The U.S. absolutely should be. I mean, the state of Yap itself has a main island also called Yap. And in the current NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, there's $1.5 billion for the refurbishment of the runway and the taxiway on the main island. For a small fraction of that, the U.S. could be building out these facilities all the way up and down the chain, which would allow Pacific Mission Aviation to operate, which would allow the Peace Corps, for example, to come back. And the Peace Corps is incredibly valuable for the local population and for building up those soft power ties with the U.S. So by ceding these pieces of infrastructure and not getting ahead of it, I mean, there are no docks on any of these islands. If you are looking at a kinetic map, at a conflict map, all of these things have potential dual use. Now, I would argue that they should be dual use, primarily civilian from the point of view of the democracies, as opposed to dual use being set up for Chinese potential use. So yes, you're not only helping these people that you promised you would help through the compacts of free association, but you're also expanding the ability to defend the islands in case of a conflict over Taiwan, because there's no question that they will be involved in case of a conflict over Taiwan, which is what President Panuelo, former president of the Federated States of Micronesia, put in his letters. He knows that what the Chinese are doing there is about Taiwan.
There is this CCP strategy called surrounding the cities from the countryside. Talk to us about that and how perhaps this runway fits into that strategy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is very much what's going on. There's a filling in of these strategically unobserved or empty or not contested areas. The Chinese Communist Party will push on every door, but they'll also map in detail the relationships of people in the country. So somebody might be coming from Wuliai who has not flashed on the screen of the U.S. embassy, but is related to somebody who may end up being president, for example. And the Chinese have detailed relationship mapping of who's important and who they're related to, and it's generational. You know, they'll invite people to China, learn all about them. And we saw this with the president of Nauru, another small country, where they discovered that he had a, you know, Chinese great-great-grandmother and brought him out to, or great-great, whatever it was, a woman ancestor from China, and brought him out to China to meet these discovered relatives of his in China. The U.S. has a different kind of way of operating. There's kind of in a place like Wuliai, because members of the compacts of free association citizens can live and work in the U.S. and serve in the U.S. military, you'll have a lot of people on that island who have lived and worked in the U.S. or have relatives or who are veterans themselves who served in the U.S. military. So the principal of the high school did his training in the U.S. It's a much more genuine potential connection, but it's not the U.S. that's providing the runway. Is the Chinese are running circles around everybody in the narrative warfare domain. So they're saying when the U.S. comes to build infrastructure, it's militarizing the islands and it's making you a target. But when we come, we're just building civilian capacity. No, and there's nobody to counter it.
Cleo Pascal, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
A pleasure. Thanks again.
That's all for today's China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. If you have any feedback on the show or have something you'd like to see us cover, send us an email at chinainfocus@ntd.com. We'd love to hear from you. For on-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for watching. See you tomorrow.